Mike Llewellyn. Total daily maximum load.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Mike Llewellyn, Administrator of the Water Quality Division at DEQ. With me today is Greg Aldrich, who is the new manager of the Watershed Management Section that oversees TMDLs here in Oregon. Greg took the place of Dick Peterson, who had this position for several years. Dick is now the Administrator of our Land Quality Division. So Greg came from the AIR program and has been on the job a couple of weeks and learning the TMDL program every day. I just wanted to introduce him to you since you'll be seeing more of him in the future. This is the second required report to the committee on the TMDL program in Oregon. We made a presentation back in January. Dick Peterson appeared before you and apparently made a very brief presentation at the end of the day. So I thought I'd just give you more of a perspective of what's happened over the last year with our total maximum daily load program. Just as a refresher to the committee, the total maximum daily load program schedule was really driven by the 1997 Oregon plan, where DEQ committed as a part of the Oregon plan to complete TMDLs for all of the impaired waters that were on the 303D list as of 1998 over a 10-year period. And as you can see by the map on the back of the handout that you have, the way we approach the TMDL program in Oregon is to do it on a watershed basis rather than stream by stream, primarily because most natural resource agencies are trying to manage natural resource issues on a watershed approach. And obviously, with some issues like temperature, you have to deal with the entire watershed. You can't look at just a stream segment and deal with it in sort of a vacuum. We also are subject of a consent decree that was a result of a second round of litigation that hit Oregon in 1997. There was a litigation brought in the mid-80s against EPA by a couple of environmental groups who were concerned about the pace and the rigor of the state of Oregon doing TMDLs. There was a consent decree filed in the mid-80s, and then the same environmental groups brought a second round of litigation in the mid-90s, which ended up with a second consent decree being filed federally that drives the TMDL schedule in Oregon. We did, however, maintain in that consent decree the schedule that we agreed to in the Oregon plan, even though there was some pressure in the litigation to accelerate the TMDL schedule here in Oregon. We stuck with the 10-year schedule that came out of the Oregon plan. So we've really got two drivers right now in terms of the TMDL program, one being the Oregon plan commitments and the second being this federal consent decree. With regard to the consent decree, we are ahead of schedule in terms of the number of TMDLs that are required in that consent decree. And by the way, what that means is if we were to fall off schedule and not do the TMDLs per the consent decree, then EPA would be required under the consent decree to actually do the TMDLs in Oregon. So as long as we're staying ahead or on schedule with that consent decree, EPA stays out of the picture and we maintain control. You might see, however, from the actual map that we are starting to get a little bit behind in terms of the actual basin schedules. Although not that far behind. A lot of that is just driven by the fact with the early TMDLs coming up for approval, there were a lot of requests for extension of time, so people got used to how we were doing TMDLs. We were on a learning curve as well. So some of the TMDLs in the early days of the schedule were pushed off a little bit, and that's had some residual impact to our overall schedule, but we're pretty close to maintaining the color schedule that you see on that map, and I don't anticipate any problems in terms of the federal consent decree at this point. I'd also remind the committee that in the 99 session, we were given 8 limited duration positions to actually accelerate part of the Willamette Basin. Originally, most of the Willamette Basin was scheduled for the years 2005 through 2007. The governor and the legislature agreed and gave us additional positions, and we've accelerated 9 of the 12 basins in the Willamette to get those done by the year 2003. So you'll see in that schedule that the Willamette, or part of the Willamette overall basin, is moved up to the 2003 time frame. Since January of this year, we have submitted and have had approved by EPA 6 TMDLs, and that's on, you can see the on the very first page of your handout, starting with the Little River watershed in January. We've received approval from EPA for these 6 particular TMDLs. Currently, we have submitted to EPA for approval, but they've not yet acted on the Lower Columbia River total maximum daily load for total dissolved gas. That's primarily a function of the dams. When dams operate and spill water, you get entrainment of gas, and it can cause what's known as gas bubble disease in fish. So we did a TMDL for that. It's in front of EPA for approval. And we have gone through a public hearing process on the Snake River Hell's Canyon complex. That also, by the way, was another TMDL that had been scheduled for out years, 2005 through 2007. But because of the relicensing of the Hell's Canyon complex with Idaho Power, the state of Idaho had a different TMDL schedule to do the Snake River than DEQ did. Idaho Power agreed to what's called receipts authority, which is essentially they gave us funds through a contractual arrangement to accelerate our side of the river so that the TMDL can be done in time so that the FERC licensing on the Hell's Canyon complex can move ahead in the schedule that Idaho has. So with that, Mr. Chair, that's just a basic overview of what we've accomplished over the last 12 months, and I'd be glad to answer any other questions that you might have.
Senator Legislators.
Keep it free to form. Michael, I noticed on your approved TMDLs, Bear Creek is not listed in Jackson County. I thought that was one of the priorities years ago.
Mr. Chair, Senator Messel, you're correct. What we're showing here are the what I characterize as sort of the post-Oregon plan TMDLs. These are the TMDLs that we really started to do under the Oregon plan. There are several TMDLs that were done in the 80s, including Bear Creek, that have already been done that we just didn't show on this list.
Mr. Chair, what is happening with the water temperature standards? I know that's a part of the TMDLs. Some of that in flux. I know we hear a lot of discussions, concerns, and maybe some discussions of trying to grade some of those designations. Is that holding up some of these TMDLs from being completed?
Mr. Chair, Senator Messler, you're correct. When DEQ submitted its suite of temperature standards in 1996, they ultimately were acted on by EPA in 1999. As you may recall from a previous presentation that EPA gave to, I think, the full committee a few months ago, part of the review of Oregon's temperature standards generated a lot of concerns, particularly by the fisheries agencies, as to whether or not some of those standards were protective enough. EPA did approve 3 of the 4 standards, the 64 degrees for salmonid migration, 55 for spawning, and 50 degrees for bull trout. They disapproved our 68-degree criteria for the lower Willamette. As a part of that consultation with the services on Oregon standards, the federal agencies proposed to basically revisit the science of salmon and temperature. They've been at it for about 2 years. You may recall about a year ago they released the first draft of the guidance that is basically what the services and EPA want to see in terms of an appropriate temperature standard in the Northwest. Meaning EPA, received quite a few comments. They went back, redid the guidance, and re-released it about 3 weeks ago. They are in a public comment period currently, which ends, I believe, the middle of this month. There is a hearing or a workshop, actually, that EPA will be holding, I believe it's this week, in Oregon, once again receiving comment on the latest iteration of that temperature guidance. To answer your question about does that impact the TMDL schedule, it really does not at this point. The only wild card right now is that with the disapproval of 68 degrees for the lower end of the Willamette, we are right in the middle of developing a TMDL for temperature for the entire Willamette main stem. And so we have received questions about what's the target if EPA disapproved it, and that's, we hope to have that resolved over the next year and not slow down the Willamette TMDL. But in general, if the standard change, well, first of all, if and when the services and EPA finalize this guidance, it is just that. It is guidance to the states. We will have a year under the consultation conditions to evaluate the guidance and determine whether Oregon wants to change its standards or not to comport with the guidance. If we do change the standards, obviously it's a full rulemaking and we'd probably be at it for another year after that. So in the meantime, the current TMDL schedule stands. The temperature standards that are approved today, with the exception of the lower Willamette, are the valid legal basis of all these TMDLs. So I don't anticipate right now any impact to this schedule. Obviously, once this all plays out in terms of where the services and EPA will be on temperature, if we're perceived as being far away from what they would like, we've got a lot of process in front of us. It may be that when all is said and done, we'll be fine with the current standards. We just have to see how it plays out, Senator.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up?
Follow up.
Thank you. Isn't there two sides to the temperature standards, though? I know some of the fisheries resource people think that it's too warm. But isn't there also a concern that maybe the baseline or the natural conditions, some regions can't meet the standard? And so how are we dealing with that?
Mr. Chair and Senator Messerly, actually the way that, and this has been a point of confusion, I think, for years, frankly, with Oregon's current standard. Oregon's standard today even allows for the fact that if a stream naturally cannot meet the criterion that apply, whether it's the 64 degrees for migration or the spawning criteria, that whatever that natural condition is, after you back out, you know, feasible measures that we can do in terms of temperature management, becomes the standard. And that same issue is playing out with this discussion at the federal level. You're absolutely correct that on one hand you've got the fisheries biologists who are looking at sort of an absolute view of what's the appropriate temperature to protect fish throughout their entire life stage versus the reality of what streams in the Pacific Northwest can do, and trying to take into account that you've got everything from the Olympic Peninsula to, you know, the desert area of Oregon and Idaho, and trying to marry those two concepts. I think ultimately that EPA and the services will still validate that even though they might identify optimal temperature conditions from a biological standpoint for the fish, that has to be matched against the reality of any particular watershed or stream in terms of what it naturally can do. And actually, the TMDL program, when all is said and done, evaluates and answers that question, we hope, is what can this particular watershed do in terms of ultimate temperature profile? And if it doesn't meet the numeric criteria, so be it. We turn that into EPA and we say, based on our modeling and what we think could reasonably be done in this watershed, here's what the temperature profile will be. But that tension, Senator, clearly exists today as it has for the past four years.
Another quick one. Thank you. Do we have the data to establish what can be done in some of these basins that are in question?
Mr. Chair and Senator Messerly, obviously that's a huge question that we get asked in every TMDL, and part of it really comes down to the nature of the data that we had in any particular part of the state. I mean, obviously, we can't answer very well somebody's allegation that a stream in 1910 probably violated 64 degrees if there's no data and it's all anecdotal. What we get the best records that we can in terms of actual monitoring, but it really comes down to a modeling exercise to plug in different variables like we talked about at the last meeting with FLIR. We try to plug in what can be done in terms of riparian management, management of point sources, what do we know about groundwater impacts, and do the best we can to estimate what we think the actual natural background condition is. I use the Grand Ronde model a lot. In the Grand Ronde TMDL that we submitted a couple of years ago, after we got done with the modeling, we told EPA that we don't believe that the lower end of that system can meet 64 degrees, based on at least our modeling of what was feasible there. We had good science, we believe, around that determination. We turned it into EPA and it passed muster with them because we said we just don't think that when you account for all the things that we can do to physically restore the Grand Ronde system, at least in the lower end of the system, we're not going to get to 64 degrees. So that's the type of analysis we try to bring to all of the TMDLs. But you're right. I mean, when we get into discussions about people who say, well, we think 100 years ago this stream was violating or wouldn't have met 64 degrees, unless somebody has the data, it's a relatively anecdotal discussion, and we just try to bring whatever data we have to bear.
Thank you. Any further? Okay, then, Mac, that's fine. Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we got the Oregon Plant Information Strategy, Janine Solwasser. Looks like you got a sidekick with you there. Jeff Huntington.
Thank you, Chair Krieger. I decided I would come along for the ride today. This is Janine's first time testifying in front of a legislative committee, and welcome her to Oregon state government and the Oregon plan. And we're going to tune up for the session here by providing you with an overview of the work that OWEB has been doing to fulfill the statutory intent and charge that Senate Bill 946 gave to OWEB in the last legislative session. And Senate Bill 946 really focused in on that portion of the Oregon plan that recognizing the importance of having the data sets of natural resource agencies and partners to the Oregon plan have the data and information that is being produced in a variety of different contexts made more accessible and more available to all those who are interested in it for whatever their reason might be, whether it's a local watershed council or soil and water conservation district or a federal agency needing state information or a local municipality that could benefit from access to a state data set. So Senate Bill 946 asked us to take on the notion of trying to bring a little order to that chaos and to try to standardize the protocols and the policies that at least the state natural resource Oregon plan agencies are employing. And Janine Selwasser comes to us with a whole lot of experience in doing that and has been hard at work with all of our partners. So today we thought we'd just fill you in on what has happened so far, and I'll turn it over to her, and then if there are any questions, we'll both try to handle them.
So good afternoon, Chair Krieger and Senator Messerly and Representative King. What I wanted to orient you to the information packet so you know what you have in front of you. The first page actually will be called the friendly graphic. It's really what we want to produce over the next 2 years, the short term, which includes identifying the questions that people have, what are the information needs, working with our partners to develop one place where people can go to get information, which would be accessed through a web portal. And that the idea is to really make it place-based so that people can locate on a map a place they want to get information about. And the idea is that it's not just data, but also how you use that data. So we want to make accessible the tools and the expertise. And what we've been doing in the last 6 months is really developing that partnership in terms of how we can pull this off. So we've been working very closely with the universities and with our state agency partners and with our federal agency partners. On the second page is the executive summary of the strategy that we've developed. It has been presented to our board, and we're hoping to have board approval in March. We're planning to bring together in December expertise in a variety of different areas, drawing from Oregon State University and University of Oregon, University of Washington, and some of the East Coast representatives, so that as we embark upon this initiative, we take advantage of the expertise that's out there so that we can do it very cost effectively. And really our goal is to make sure we create a useful system. And I go back to those questions of what are the priority questions, so that when we start to compile the information, it's really informing those priority questions. So that's where we're going to need your help. We're going to need the help of the Oregon Plan teams. We're going to need the help of local restoration groups, and we're going to need the help of the OWEB programs and the OWEB board to really kind of narrow down on those priority questions. The behind the executive summary is the actual legislation, so if you have specific questions about the intent, we provided that for you so that you might help us to clarify some of the roles, because it's a very large task and we want to be focused and we want to be product oriented. And to implement this, we've been working with our partners, and there's four that we've explicitly identified on the final sheet, which would include the Oregon Geographic Information Council, OSU Institute for Natural Resources, and the Oregon Progress Board. So that's kind of just the outline of the handout. We have the information system strategy, so that's a product that we have developed right now. We're planning to implement the first phase of this information system beginning in January with the development of a web portal, and we'll have to access information, we'll actually have statewide data standards for hydrography or streams and fish habitat distributions, and that's where our partners, Department of Water Resources, is the lead on the streams, and Department of Fish and Wildlife is the lead on the fish habitat distributions. And one of the issues, that, as I understand it, that basically the need for the Senate Bill 946 is that information is not integrated, and it's scattered all over the place. So this is our first opportunity to take two statewide data sets that were developed by different agencies and partnerships with different people and actually make sure that the fish habitat lines up with the streams. It sounds like a simple thing, logical thing, but it doesn't always happen to be. And one of our challenges is how we can make sure that local information is also incorporated in this process with very good quality control, as well as the state. Having come from California, where I worked on these kinds of systems, I feel very fortunate to work in Oregon, where the relationships are really good between the universities, between the state agencies. We've got some excellent processes in place for actually developing standards that are done in cooperation, voluntary, incentive-based. So it's, things are lined up, and we're ready for the first phase of implementation.
Senator Mesley, anything? Representative King? Any questions?
I do have them, sure.
I was just going to say, I was in shock that Senator Mesley didn't have a question, but I'm over it now.
So thank you. As I recall, Janine, the concern of the last legislative session, maybe I need to have my memory corrected, but was that we needed to one source of where all the information would be held, whether it's water rights or land use or soil types or ownerships or whatever, and that there was a tremendous need to do that, and that one of the areas that we were concerned about in the monitoring from OWEB was that it all be on the data be on a form that was compatible, so it could all be put on the same scheme. So I guess my question is that the major function of OWEB, and where is that? Where is this information being held? From what I read of your, if I'm reading your outline right, the information would be held at the Natural Resource Institute?
No, actually, sorry for the protocol, Chair Krieger and Senator Messerly. The plan is actually to look at the priority question for the Oregon plan for local restoration groups. And some of those questions, these are just sort of placeholders, are conditions getting better or worse for fish? Well, that's going to require information about the fish. It's going to require information about the watershed. For the statewide data sets that were of concern, the plan is to have those accessed through the Oregon Geographic Data Clearinghouse. That's an existing structure, and it's a good system. And they're in a position to house that information when it's applicable for the whole state. Where the challenge becomes is when we need to couple that information, that statewide GIS data, with other kinds of information. And the whole idea of it's not just about providing access to data, it's about providing access to data and research and expertise, And that's where the Institute could help in terms of trying to package beyond just the straight data, the information we need to address the questions. So there, that first element and what our first phase will focus on is making sure that that consistent framework data will be available from one place, the Oregon Geographic Data Clearinghouse. But when you're dealing with issues of salmon and watershed, we would be able to search by basin for other kinds of information, too.
Thank you, Chair. I'm still a little bit confused, and it's not your fault. I think it's just that I wasn't close enough to it during session. But it was my understanding that Nature Conservancy, through contract with DSL, was developing that information or doing the research and holding that information, and that the last legislature's transferred that responsibility to the Natural Resource Institute. And I thought that was also holding that information or being responsible. I guess maybe, where is this, you just mentioned the geographic information?
It's within the Department of Administrative Services.
Okay.
Formerly was the, in the legislation, it was referred to as the State Service Center for GIS, and so now it's within a new structure. But the specific information on the heritage data set that has traditionally been served through that program, the beauty of an information system is that you can have data in different places and have one place to access it. But you have to all agree to play by the same rules.
Right.
And that's what we're trying to do, is to facilitate. You know, we've had conversations with Department of Administrative Services about, you know, is it possible for you to serve all information? It actually is not, and it's actually not efficient to do that way. So what we want to propose is that they make sure that the statewide information that everybody needs is accessible, and that's their responsibility. But then when you start going beyond information like roads and streams and land ownership, to information about individual species, then you might go to other places, but you still have one place to access it. So that's really what we're trying to propose, is a somewhat distributed system, but really making, and why we want to involve users throughout the whole process is we want to continually asking them, are we answering your questions, and why not? Does the information exist? I think what will help is also to prioritize funding towards information that we don't have and we need.
Just another quick. So what we're really putting in rephrasing that, I guess, in my terms, we're really trying to get everyone on the same format so that we can combine the information, or at least they can access it wherever it is. Where are we on the time frame with DAS? Where is DAS on the time frame? Are they up and running now, or?
They're up and running. There's actually 13 different themes that they have different agencies taking the lead on. And I mentioned hydrography with water resources and transportation with Oregon Department of Transportation. And it's a very ambitious plan. They're wanting to have data standards in the next 2 years for every single one of those themes. They have over 200 people involved in a very collaborative process to recommend standards. And what we're trying to do is make sure that that information that's relevant to the Oregon Plan has a lot of Oregon Plan team involvement, and that OEB is the responsible staff to make sure that the data, like on culverts, is appropriate for when we need to look at fish passage, whereas standard transportation might not be so sensitive to that. So we're going to have propose a special process where the OEB board actually gets involved in endorsing a standard when it's appropriate.
Thank you.
Okay.
Chair Krieger, yeah. Senator Messerly, if I can jump in a little bit and go back up to that 40,000-foot level from where we emerged from the session, because there was a lot of discussion about the role of the Natural Resource Institute at OSU and OEB and information housing. And we spent a fair amount of time over the course of the summer immediately following the session trying to hammer out how to best get at the roles that were contemplated in 946 and the legislation that set up the Institute. And it really does come down to there are some core framework data sets that are generated principally by state agencies that the institutional mechanism was in place to house through the Oregon Geographic Information Council, or DAS, there are a number of data sets that are critical for natural resource-specific tasks, like the heritage program and species distributions and things like that, that the Institute is very well situated to grab hold of, house, and but also add that added value of interpreting and helping decision makers piece it together so it's useful, so that it actually is available in a format that can inform a decision maker and kind of advance the decision making process, whether it's legislative or agency or watershed council. And then OWEB steps in and is a bridge, if you will, in my view, where we focus on two things. One, trying to get everybody to use the same format by just prodding and coaxing and nurturing and urging the process along that people are talking to each other. And second, create some kind of mechanism that's available so that a diverse group of constituencies can access what's being housed, whether it's at the Institute or it's down the road here at the Administrative Services. And that's that web-based portal. And that's a device, a mechanism, if you will, to create easy access. And so where we have focused, our main role is on the formatting of the standards, but secondarily is creating that map that's on the front of this handout that is a geographic-based way to access information. So if you're sitting in Malheur County and want to know what data, natural resource information is available, you have a single place to go and will know with some level of certainty that whatever natural resource data is available for that particular area, whether it's housed at Department of Administrative Services or the Natural Resource Institute or some other place, that it's relatively available and it's consistent and it's accessible. And so that's the bridge that we've tried to focus our Senate Bill 946 task to accomplish.
Mr. Chair, I guess that brings another question to my mind. Do you have the authority to require that, at least of the new data that's being developed, that it meets the format? And if not, I think that's could be a big problem.
Chair Krieger, Senator Meserle, we have authority in a couple of ways. One is if we're funding it, and OWEB has funded a number of data sets, we have conditioned the funding on having certain standards, the data collected to certain standards. Senate Bill 946 does provide that in order to effectuate the program, and I'm quoting, the board shall establish protocols, policies, and procedures necessary to integrate and organize geographic information and make it available. We have premised our conversations with the state natural resource agencies that there will be an approval process that all data sets will go through, at least for state Oregon Plan natural resource data sets. The OWEB board will put a stamp of approval on it and say, this is Oregon Plan, consistent, and it'll work. And that's a little different than having some set of rules that says thou shall do it this way and this way and this way, and that's the way we're approaching it. And we have, I think, an understanding with the natural resource agencies that if there's not an approval that an individual data set is going to work in the context of the Senate Bill 946 goals, that there's a problem and it'll be addressed. I think that's a long way of saying is I think there's a legitimate interpretation that we have the authority we need to impose a standard, but frankly, I don't think that there's a need to have us go through a formal trigger mechanism to do that, and I see this working with an approval process.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
On the agenda, we have Measure 66 audit report, but that's not ready, so we'll be skipping that. And John Lilly, I don't think he's back yet, is he? I think she just went after him, or Judith did. There was a public comment request from Steve Burton. I'll let you do that now, Steve.
Okay, thanks.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Burton, and I am here as a concerned citizen as well as to help protect the interests of property owners and my friends and neighbors in the Dune City, Oregon area. Thank you very much for giving me an opportunity to offer a few words for your consideration these very important matters. Since I had to take time off from work today to be here, I'm going to be very brief. First, I'd like to underscore my appreciation for Senator Messerly's common sense approach to the challenges we're facing on the easement issues. As you prepare to offer some practical guidance to the Division of State Lands and the Water Resources Department in hopes of clarifying the legislative intent, I cannot emphasize enough how important it is to get an exemption to these administrative easements related to domestic and agricultural water usage. The property owners in our community cherish the unique Oregon environment. That is just one of many reasons we choose to live here. We are good stewards of the land and water, but we must not be unreasonably burdened with an administrative process that is nothing more than a formality and apparently bureaucratic paperwork that costs all of us as taxpayers far more to administer than the amount of revenue generated. These easements create a cloud on the title of real property, which burdens the reasonable use and marketability of the real property at issue because the easements do not run with the land. In effect, these easements unnecessarily constitute to a taking. Without the water, the land would be of little value, and that hurts existing property home value, property tax revenues, real estate sales, et cetera, et cetera. Therefore, easements need to be tied to the water rights and run with the land, not the person. I was even on the phone this morning with the mayor of Dune City, and even he is not in compliance with this, and they have statistics from the meeting Senator Messerly attended last week, and we are interested in working through these details, but we're hoping that this committee can guide the legislative or the administrative agencies. Other issues created by these easements include the reality that everyone who has sold property down through the years but who failed to disclose the somewhat obscure administrative easement issue is guilty of failure to disclose, an issue that could prompt an endless stream of lawsuits for residents for fraud against private sellers of real property, real estate sales representatives, brokers, and the like. It would be a shame to create an unnecessarily drag on an inconceivably long list of people, bringing them into court for possibly years just to work through these issues. And we're hoping that this will not come to that. I do not believe that the state employees who are involved or the property owners who are at risk want to invest their time and resources making a lot of busy work for lawyers, if I may, simply because the state agency is trying to follow existing procedures and rules. So I ask you to consider the impact and impracticality of the present situation as you strive to develop a more workable solution. And by exempting domestic and agricultural users from these overly burdensome and unrealistic easement requirements. Senator Messerly, again, thank you. We appreciate your assistance in this. I pledge my support to your efforts, and please feel free to call on me if I can do anything to assist you along the way. Thank you very much.
Senator Messerly,
any comments or questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think I need to clarify for the record that
sure. What
Mr. Burton is referring to is that at the meeting in Florence last Friday, was it?
Last Tuesday.
Tuesday. I announced that I had spoken to legislative council and had them having a bill drafted which would exempt residential and agricultural uses from requiring a fee for an easement. I think they still have to have an easement, but it could be tied directly to the water right, and that would clear the Division of State Lands and the State of Oregon from their responsibilities, but remove the burden. It was interesting. I had two staff members from separate state agencies who came up to me after the meeting and expressed that they hoped that my legislation that I'm drafting would be successful because they simply don't want to have to deal with it at the field level. And I want to thank you, Mr. Burton, for coming today.
Sure. Appreciate thank you.
I think it does go to the question that we've been talking about for the last 2 years about the bureaucracy and the complication of the processes that in most cases are unnecessary. This is a good example of it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll stand by here for just a minute. We've got Division of State Lands supposed to be coming through the door any second here.